Look, the truth is he's a nasty guy. He was so nice to me. I mean, I knew it. I was watching. I kept saying, come on, Ted, let's go, kid. But he's a nasty guy. Nobody likes him. Nobody in Congress likes him. Nobody likes him anywhere once they get to know him. He's a very, he's got an edge that's not good. You can't make deals with people like that, and it's not a good thing. It's not a good thing for the country. Very nasty guy.
I guess he's a nasty guy, at least according to Donald Trump, talking about Ted Cruz, of course. Good morning. Welcome aboard. We continue here on the John Gambling Show and with the help of Gail Trotter. Gail's a columnist, political analyst, attorney, lives down in Washington, D.C. She's a D.C.er, produces a podcast called Right in D.C. Hey, Gail, welcome aboard. Good morning.
Good morning. Great to be with you.
Well, thank you very, very much. All right, we've got the give and take, the back and forth. Let me get your right out of the box here, your view of the field. I think you really only have three left, and that's Trump, Cruz, and Rubio. What do you think?
I agree with you, and it's really fascinating because through this process, we've learned that the only thing inevitable about primaries is that nothing is inevitable. I mean, think of how shocked everyone is that Trump not only has managed to stay in this long, but he is doing so well despite all of the attacks on him and the efforts to discredit him. And, you know, he is politicking by means of media firestorm. Most politicians try to avoid that, and he uses it as a campaign strategy. It's just fascinating.
It is fascinating. It has, as we've been reading and watching, the mainstream Republicans, if you will, or sort of the older, more traditional Republicans in Washington and across this country. Donald Trump has completely flummoxed them. There's no explanation. They're going a little crazy. And just so that you know, Gail, where I am coming from, I was one of those same people when Donald started. I said, you know what, isn't this fun to watch, yada, 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 but he'll blow himself up and, you know, we'll move on to something a bit more expected. But I have to tell you, like so many others, I am morphing towards the thought that, you know, this guy might have the juice to get it all done. And late last week, I kind of, after the debate, I got a little antsy about the whole thing, and I went, you know, do I really want to think that this is a good idea? But then after the weekend, after thinking about it, sitting around doing a lot of nothing and thinking about it, I said to myself, you know, maybe this is precisely what America needs, the Antichrist, if you will. I mean, just go in and do everything differently.
Right, just blow everything up. I was at a dinner party on Saturday night, and one of the guests was talking about, like, they just want it taken down to the brass tacks, to the foundations, and build everything back up. And I think why people like you and me were so surprised is because Trump turned out to be an extremely effective politician. He's so entertaining. He knows how to work an audience, and he has this amazing oratorical and comedic timing. So take, for example, and I know this is near and dear to your heart being in New York, his response to Ted Cruz's remarks about New York values, it was political jujitsu. It was just this amazing thing to see Trump take this criticism from Cruz and turn it around on him in such an effective way that not only appealed to Manhattanites, to people who live, you know, New Jersey, New York, but the entire rest of the nation. He sometimes comes across as an unserious man, but when he got into the groove talking about 9/11 and the bravery of New Yorkers in responding to that, it was political jujitsu.
It was very effective, and it completely cut Ted Cruz off at the knees. He looks silly after any and all criticisms after that. We have a cut here of you talking about Donald Trump and the fact that the reason he is so focused on is because, no, this is not deep journalism that is going on. It is a reality show. It's ratings, and that's really what it's come down to. And Trump, I think, has being the television guy that he is, has understood that, and he has captured that, and he is exploiting it like nobody's ever seen before.
Yes, and think about what you just said. When he talks about polling results, which is a very inside Washington idea and process, he doesn't call it polling results. He talks about ratings. My ratings, Jeb Bush, have gone up. my ratings have got your ratings, Jeb Bush, have gone down. So he understands that the polling can be turned to his advantage, and even by using that artful term of calling it ratings instead of polling, it gives like the American people more understanding of what that means to him, and that he's really trying to get his ratings up to be for the people what they want him to be.
We're talking with Gail Trotta from Washington. All right, you're the Washington debutante. You're at the dinner parties, as you said, and you're flitting around there, and you're talking with all of the big shots in Washington. So at the dinner party, what's the conversation when the question comes up, Donald Trump versus Hillary Clinton?
Oh, it was really fascinating because out of the eight people we had at dinner, we had two Trump supporters, one of whom is from the Philippines and just became a naturalized citizen. And we had people who are willing to support whomever the Republican nominee is. But the one Democratic friend we had at the dinner party said that he was for Sanders. Because everyone knows that Hillary Clinton is a congenital liar, and she not only used her position to cover up her tracks and enrich herself through the Clinton Foundation, but she also, I would say, engaged in abusive behavior towards women who had, you know, significant complaints about Bill Clinton's treatment of them, including in the Oval Office, like Kathleen Willey. So I think that even Democrats are turned off by Hillary Clinton, not because of her politics. I mean, like last night at the Democratic debate, all three of the Democratic candidates agreed that the minimum wage should be raised to $15 million. So there, it's not a question of policy, but it's a question of, is this an honorable person? Is this someone not only that we can trust to keep America safe and lead us in the right direction, but is she the kind of person that deserves the honor of being the president of this amazing nation?
Well, I don't think the man that's there right now deserves it, but that's a whole other story, and there's nothing we can do about that. I'm surprised, Gail. I don't know you at all, but I'm surprised you have Democratic friends. But I'll you know, I think that that's probably that open-mindedness.
I live in D.C. I'm surrounded by Democrats.
I'm sure. Yeah, exactly.
So I would have no friends.
You mean, so this is a survival technique. I totally understand. Your Democratic friend, do I hear correctly that he's going to vote for a Dem no matter what?
I think so. I think he will. He's a college professor, and, you know, I can respect his viewpoints because I think a lot of Democrats come from the idea that they want to have a compassionate nation, that they, you know, the Syrian refugees, for example, that's something he really cares about. He thinks that we can win the hearts and minds of the Middle East if we bring Syrian refugees here and we acclimate them to American values, and they can go back to their, you know, they can have these bridges back to the Middle East of a positive idea. Now, of course, I vehemently disagree with that. And I think, though, for a lot of Democrats, they just need to be persuaded why these ideas will not be effective, because we might share the same values. We want peace in the world. We want peace in the Middle East. But we have different ways of getting to the results that we both agree on.
Do they not see what's taken place over the last 7 years?
They do, and they feel like it's a failure of, you know, beyond blaming the Bush administration for everything, they feel like it's a failure of diplomacy. And if we could just be nicer to the Middle East and to the governments that are over there, then they wouldn't hate us as much.
That's the attitude that's going to get us all killed, and that is exactly the attitude that our friend that we've been talking about, and the rest of the Republicans, to be honest, this is why Donald Trump and the rest of them are just making such a big noise, because that is such a foolish concept. I mean, the president yesterday attempted once again, when talking about the Americans being released from Iran, again, and John Kerry the same noise. Yes, look what diplomacy did. But I'm not sure too many Americans have looked at the cost of that diplomacy, whether it includes nuclear weapons for the Iranians, or maybe it's the $1.3 billion that the United States is paying in cash, not to mention the $150 billion in sanction money that's going back there. I mean, yeah, you can get anybody to do anything for those kind of dollars.
everyone is delighted and relieved to see the U.S. citizens who were released. I went to a demonstration in front of the White House last summer trying to advocate on behalf of these American prisoners in Iran, and I got to meet with some of the family members, and I feel like it's my duty to go out there and be a strong advocate for, you know, American interests and for these prisoners. So I am delighted that they were released. But I will tell you, the conclusion that all Americans should draw from the release of the prisoners is that Iran got everything it wanted in this deal. That is the key takeaway from this, because we know how evil and barbaric the Iranian regime is. You might remember the Green Revolution in 2009. I've written about this. There was a woman who was shot in the head on the street and bled to death. No one came to rescue her. The Iranian regime did not try to find and prosecute the person who murdered her. It was part of this total clampdown on young people in Iran who wanted to overthrow their despotic regime. And yet we see that this administration has continued to turn a blind eye to the Islamic Republic of Iran's government policy of suppression of dissent and the democratic yearnings of the people. So we have this fundamental distrust and skepticism of this Iranian deal. And we know that since these prisoners were released, Iran would only have done that if they're getting everything they want out of President Obama's deal.
And then they come and spit in our face, Gail. You know, they shoot the rockets across the bow of the aircraft carrier Truman. They launch a ballistic missile. And then they show our sailors, you know, bowing before them and apologizing. I mean, it just seems that the administration has a complete and total disconnect, and that's why Americans are crazed, and that's why they're willing to take the chance on a Donald Trump to turn the whole thing around. Fascinating, Gail. I'm going to let you go, but thank you very much for your involvement here. I appreciate it. I enjoyed the conversation. Thank you.
Great to be with you. Thank you for inviting me.
Gail Trotta, ladies and gentlemen, commentator. She has her own program. It's a podcast called Right in D.C. If you want to learn a little bit more, hear more from Gail.